ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Lenny.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and also the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, or if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, join us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with vegan cookbook author Terry Hope Romero. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
The Guardian reports that Barack Obama launched a new initiative against wildlife trafficking, using his executive authority to take action against illegal trade that is fueling rebel wars and now threatens the survival of elephants and rhinos. The initiative, announced as the president visited Tanzania on the final stop of his African tour, was the second time in recent weeks that Obama used an executive order to advance environmental policy, this after announcing a sweeping new climate change plan. The latest executive order would set up a presidential task force to draw up a new strategy for cracking down on the criminal gangs behind the explosion in trafficking, as well as choke off the demand for elephant ivory, rhino tusk, and other animal parts. Estimates by conservation groups suggest that the illegal trade in wildlife is worth up to $10 billion a year. The executive order called for $10 million to train police officers and park rangers. The measures outlined in the executive order expand on existing American efforts to help countries in Africa fight off organized criminal gangs behind the poaching networks. The State Department's African director states that within the last few months, the State Department and the United Nations have both declared that wildlife trafficking is becoming a security threat. As they see criminal networks getting increasingly involved, poachers with night vision goggles and high-powered rifles, you also see some rebel militias trading in ivory and rhino horn as sources of currency and value. The initiative has won praise from conservation groups who have despaired at the explosion of wildlife trafficking over the last decade.
From the Center for Biological Diversity, the Washington, D.C. Court of Appeals upheld a decision to ban imports of polar bears shot and killed in Canada. The ban was triggered after the Center for Biological Diversity and allies secured Endangered Species Act protection for polar bears in 2008. Hunters and Safari Club International challenged the ban but lost in court. Earlier this year, the same court rejected an attempt by polar bear trophy hunters and the state of Alaska to completely strip polar bears of their federal protection.
From coast to coast, chickens are being abandoned to animal shelters and sanctuaries. Despite visions of humane chicken coops, happy birds, and cheap eggs, the growing trend of raising backyard chickens in urban settings is backfiring as disillusioned city dwellers dump unwanted chickens on animal shelters. The trend of backyard chickens can be traced to the so-called locavore movement, which spiked in popularity about 5 years ago as advocates urged people to eat more food grown and processed close to home. But people are discovering that hens lay eggs for 2 years and then can live a decade longer, and that actually raising the birds can be noisy, messy, labor-intensive, and expensive. At Farm Sanctuary, which is headquartered in New York, 500 abandoned chickens show up each year, including many suffering from maltreatment or illness. It's the same scenario at the Chicken Run Rescue in Minnesota, where there has been a steady climb in abandoned birds, from fewer than 50 in 2001 to nearly 500 in 2012. The same is true at many other farmed animal sanctuaries across the country. Backyard chicken farmers are buying chickens from the same hatcheries that supply the nation's largest poultry producers and are rearing them without proper space, food, or vet care. In addition to the noise, many urban farmers are surprised that chickens attract pests like rats and predators, including foxes, raccoons, hawks, and even neighborhood dogs. And when they get sick or hurt, they need care that can run into hundreds of dollars, boosting the price of that homegrown egg far beyond the most expensive grocery store brands. We hope the enthusiasm for raising backyard chickens will fade and that consumers will take a second look at their appetite for eggs and poultry. And according to the Harvard Nurses' Health Study on Women's Health, one of the largest studies on diet and health, the number one single cause of death is heart disease, and dietary cholesterol is a significant risk factor for death. The study indicated that eating an egg a day shortens a woman's life as much as smoking 5 cigarettes a day.
From American Wild Horse Preservation, wild horse advocates are celebrating a newfound ability to help manage wild horses in Nevada. Advocates gathered with Republican Governor Brian Sandoval during a signing ceremony for AB 264. The new law allows agreements between the state and advocacy groups to humanely manage wild animals on state lands, namely the wild horses in the Virginia Range outside of Reno. The state cannot make decisions about herds on federal land. The bill also imposes a gross misdemeanor penalty on people who take or feed feral or stray livestock. Wildlife experts say feeding the animals can attract them to unsafe situations, such as near major roads. Nevada law previously prohibited such feeding, but there was no penalty. Stay with us. Coming up next is a conversation with Terry Hope Romero, author and co-author of several best-selling and award-winning cookbooks, including Vegan Pie in the Sky, Vegan Cupcakes Take Over the World, Viva Vegan, and Vegan Eats World. That's next on Animal Concerns of Texas.
Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas, Terry Hope Romero. Thanks for being on the show, Terry.
Thanks.
Hey, Terry, why don't you start out by telling our listeners a little bit about how you got into veganism?
How did I get into this? At 16, which was only like about a month ago, I became vegetarian, and at that time, there was really no internet or anything like that. So I didn't really know what I was doing, except that I was kind of interested in for health reasons, and I also really loved to cook, and I loved the challenge of creating dishes that I used to eat but without meat. And as I learned more about where food comes from and the impact it has on the environment and on animals and us, I became more interested in vegan stuff, like actually doing more vegan stuff and making vegan food and all this kind of stuff didn't really happen until I moved out of New England and I moved to New York City in like the mid-90s. So that happened more later on in my 20s when I actually was hanging out with more vegans and there were vegan restaurants to go to and better places to shop.
I suppose if you were 16, you were living with your parents, did you have trouble with your change of lifestyle?
Oh, they loved it.
Oh, good.
Kidding. No, they didn't. Just kidding. They hated it. They thought I was going to just disappear and, become weak-willed and all these very strange ideas connected to what eating meat does to you. Psychologically, they thought I was going to just, I don't know, something. So they hated it. But the thing is, I love to cook. And that really is what made it possible is that, I didn't like ask my parents to make me like different food than that they were used to making. I grabbed anything I could find, anything I could read, which was mostly Vegetarian Times at the time and old school cookbooks like Diet for a New Planet and Moosewood and all those things like that. And I was like, I'm going to learn how to make, how to feed myself. And that's sort of how it all began with me and vegan food.
Wow, that's neat that your parents gave you full access to the kitchen and you could do some experimentation at such an early age.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I never stopped cooking. It's funny because I know people that when they went vegan or vegetarian, they stopped cooking. And I'm like, no.
No, no.
That's exactly when you got to start, even in more force than ever.
Well, when you're looking at a recipe and you're going to veganize it, what are some of the things that you can take into consideration? What are some of the harder things to do, and what are some of the easier things to do?
Well, the thing I keep in mind is that the flavors are going to taste different, and that things are going to be more pronounced that you didn't notice before, such as like a lot of the herbs and spices. And there's one critical thing, the concept of umami, which is sort of that other thing that we can taste between besides sweet and sour and salty. And a lot of plant foods don't really have that pronounced umami flavor that animal products have. So I try to think about what's going to add that kind of rich, savory background flavor that a lot of times is missing from vegan food, or at least when you start cooking with it. So I think, like, can I add some nuts to this? Can I add some sautéed mushrooms with nutritional yeast help? I mean, like, vegan food is sort of like, it's like a huge, like, art store that you can go into, you can grab from to, you know, create, like, a new thing, a new creation. So I think about what's going to taste savory and hearty. I mean, I like salads, and I am looking at a salad cookbook right now.
But no,
I
don't really, do it.
No, my salad cookbook is going to be awesome.
Okay.
I want to call it Salads Don't Suck. I don't know if let me do that. But this is actually going to change the concept of vegan salad. But anyway, but back to other things. So I think about what do I miss? What do I really want to taste good? And I love brown rice flour and sprouts and you know, and all those kind of old school foods a lot, just as much as, you know, the next guy. But I also love dessert, and I love food that I can share with other people who might be a little nervous about thinking that all vegan food is like cold tofu and, you know, alfalfa stuff.
You know, I've always thought that one of the best methods of outreach is to cook for other people and to show them how great it can taste.
Mm-hmm. Yep, people listen to their stomachs.
Yeah, but that's one of the issues that, you know, you have when you talk to a lot of people about going vegetarian or vegan is that they're like, oh, but meat, it tastes so good, you know, and they don't want to give up that very strong bond they have with the taste of their food. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I talk to people in all stages of the process all the time. And, yeah, I mean, there's not only the taste thing that they're concerned about, but there's also the social stigma and the idea that they can never go out to dinner with their friends, or holidays are going to be this, you know, this really stressful thing where they're going to get grilled, you know. And the idea is, like, it's a process. Well, we're getting grilled, literally, along with everything else. So it's a process, I try to tell people. You know, you're going to figure these things out day by day. Don't compare your vegan journey to anyone else's.
Well, and the other thing is right now it seems like things are transitioning so quickly that with all the different dietary constraints, I remember like two Thanksgivings ago at my sister's house, we had vegan people, we had vegetarian people, we had raw people, we had kosher people, and we had gluten-free people. So my sister was like, everybody just bring one thing that you can eat, and then if you can eat something that somebody else cooks, great.
I know, right? Now other people are just as big a pain in the ass as vegan.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and that's a great thing, though. People are becoming, in general, more accustomed to the idea that, like, different people have different dietary needs. And I think in the long run, this is a great thing for vegans, you know, that we can join forces with the gluten-free folks and the raw folks and even the paleo folks. You know, the idea that not everyone can eat the same exact thing has gone a long way, and I think is a good thing for us.
Well, you know, I think, you know, a challenge for us in the Southwest, and I think just everywhere else, is most people really feel that meat is integral into their food. And Latin American food, I think, fits that description as well. And Viva Vegan, did you draw upon your background as, I guess, you're Venezuelan American, right?
Yep.
Were you able to tap into your parents' recipes or anything for that cookbook, or did you just take that on by yourself?
I think I always have some of my parents' recipes in mind. Like, making arepas is one of those things where, like, okay, here I'm going to do it. I'm going to make it, and I'm going to make it more vegan somehow. So it definitely did draw from my experience. But one of the things is my folks are foodies, and they always were. So we were looking for, like, ways to make Indian food and sushi, you know, in New England when not a lot of people were doing that. So I drew from my experience in general, is just growing up with parents that really like food. And it was fun. You know, I mean, I know things about Venezuelan food and a little bit about Mexican food, but it was a chance to learn about Peruvian food and Argentinian food and all these other really wonderful Latin American foods that a lot of Americans, North Americans, are not familiar with.
What's your favorite recipe in that book?
Oh, man. I mean, it depends what day it is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I could always go for a tamale or an empanada, and I have two entire chapters of just those.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, whatever it is.
you're good
on any given day.
So yeah. With your newer book, Vegan Eats World, you've branched out from Latin American food to cuisine from around the world. Was that very hard to research?
Not really, because I live in New York City, and more specifically, I live in Queens, which is one of the most ethnically diverse parts of North America. And one of the things I talk about in the book is, like, while I was running around and buying all my groceries and doing research for the Latin American book, like, it would be so easy to go to parts of Queens where you walk one block and, you know, there's a Korean supermarket and here's an Indian restaurant and there's, like, you know, there's a Greek market. So all these things are just within very easy access of where I live and where I work. And I know people from all over the world, you know, living and working in New York City. So it was really just, I felt like it was like a natural like evolution from doing like the Latin American book. I'm like, I want to do a whole, you know, book that just reflects all these different interesting cuisines and people that I meet all the time.
In your earlier books, a lot of them were baked goods, and I personally own, I think, a copy of every one of them, and I love all of the recipes in there. So did you guys start out with baked goods for a reason, because it's really hard to buy vegan baked goods, or what was the thinking behind those early books?
Oh, man, I feel like we're always just working on books, Issa and I, at the time. Like, there wasn't, like, two books at a time.
Really? You guys were cooking nonstop?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, like, sort of Vietnamicon, which I think almost everyone knows, like, that was sort of a vault at the same time the cupcake book was going on. And cupcakes were, in general, becoming the thing. They're still the thing, which is amazing to me. But at the time, like, they're really... It was like, well, why don't we do a vegan cupcake book? Why not? You know, and we love to bake. I love to bake. Issa loves to bake. Like, baking is just one of those things where it's like a form of meditation, practically. I'm going to come home and make some scones. That's how I'm going to unwind. And it's funny, like, while working on the baking books, I met people, like, long-time old-school vegans who hadn't had a cookie in 10 years. I'm like, really? You haven't had... Don't ever tell anyone that. I never want to be vegan. So that was part of also the reason why we worked on so many baking books. It's like to show that you can make pleasurable desserts. Dessert is one of those things, I think, if you told someone you can never have dessert again if you're a vegan, no one would ever want to do that. So I think bringing that, creating those things and creating baked goods that, again, weren't necessarily all about whole wheat flour and, you know, maple syrup, which I love those things, making them accessible and easy and the kind of things you can bring to a baby shower or work or just serve to all your non-vegan buddies and they'll be like, wow, this is easy. Being vegan is totally easy when they're brownies.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, too, is people are always expecting when you say, oh, I'm going to bring a vegan cake, they're always expecting some kind of, like, rock-hard, sprout-laden piece of sawdust. And, you know, I think it is a good idea to, you know, transition people. And even if the vegan cupcakes aren't, quote-unquote, healthy, at least they taste good and people can see that, you know, you can have those satisfying desserts and have them be vegan, even though I always try to tell people they're not that healthy. I ran into one person that was buying a vegan cupcake every day at this local coffee house, and he's like, oh, but it's okay because they're good for you. And I'm like, wait a minute here. Just because they're
right.
You know, they still have a lot of sugar and fat in them.
Well, cookies can be healthy. That's about the only thing I bake. When you make them with oats and flaxseed and raisins and nuts, they're healthy.
Yeah, I mean, we have a wholesome chapter in the cookie book, which has a couple like healthy cookies. And sure, I make those, but hey, you know, don't eat the whole batch by yourself.
So, what do you have coming up next?
I know I told you about the dreaded salad book, but it's going to be awesome. It's really going to be fun. I'm a busy person, and I know a lot of other people are just, you know, we've got a lot going on, and we want to eat more vegetables and to make room for, you know, to feel good when you have that cupcake. So this is a book about eating more vegetables, eating more fruits, you know, making this stuff relatively easily, not thinking too hard about it. And also, like, these salads are going to be full meals, like the whole meal in a bowl kind of thing, and making the most out of like all the exciting produce that's around, and showing people that, hey, you know, salads don't have to, you know, be boring. And this is sort of a personal thing with me, where like I feel like when you first go like vegetarian or vegan, like, you know, you go out with someone and, you know, to a restaurant, and they're like, well, there's salad.
Yeah, we've all heard
there's
that many
salad.
Times.
And it's just sad. And I had many years of not liking salad and not wanting to be near a salad and missing out. I feel like, you know, we're missing out on with that attitude. And, you know, there's a lot to be really enjoyed about a hearty salad, especially now when it's like, you know, 90, 95 degrees outside, but even during the winter too, to sort of shake up our palate and feel like we're eating something fresh and lively. So that's what I'm working on right now.
Well, you know, even as a vegan, I think I need to include more raw foods and more leafy greens in my diet. So perhaps it's a good idea.
Yeah. Oh, I've got one more thing I'm working on right now, and this is super exciting. So I'm part of a totally independently produced vegan cooking show called The Vegan Mashup. And we are funding our second season right now, filming. We have already one season, and it's been shown in a couple public access channels throughout the country. So if you want to see it happen, if you want a season two of the Vegan Mashup, go to deliciousTV.com or just Google Vegan Mashup and help us out, because we want to bring you an awesome vegan cooking show.
How do you market that to other public access areas? Like if we wanted to get it on our public TV here in El Paso, how does that work?
You can contact them and say, I want Vegan Mashup. You can send them links. You can email them. I mean, I'm not the media expert on this, but I think most public access stations are pretty approachable. So, yeah, just let them know who we are, because they, you know, just in case they don't know, and say, hey, we want them on our public access.
Yeah, and less high school basketball shows.
Oh, no.
Or those wonderful city council meetings. Well, what about, like, the Food Network and shows like that? Is there any chance of getting a totally vegan cooking show on those outlets?
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know anything about the Food Network. Food Network, are you listening?
Yeah, exactly. Because I find it really annoying when I go to the gym to work out, and you know how they have all the TV screens up there so that you can watch TV, and they always have the Food Network on there with people eating the most gruesome food you could think of, either obscene amounts or just really weird stuff. And I'm always like, wouldn't it be nice just to have a vegan cooking show up there where you wouldn't have to look at a slaughtered alligator baby getting bit in half or whatever?
Right. Well, I agree. I concur. But for now, we're kind of doing it on our own. We're totally indie. So help us.
And you can watch it on your computer, I'm sure, too, right?
Yeah, I think we have. Definitely, you can watch some of it on our on iTunes and also on our Delicious TV station. So, yeah.
Well, it looks like you've done a ton of research for the new book, Vegan Eats World. We have it here in the studio with us, and it's huge. I was looking at the table of contents, and I had gone through like 4 or 5 pages. I was like, oh, this book's great. And I didn't realize that there was still a couple more pages of table of contents. This book even makes it a cooking look appealing to me when I do absolutely put a bowl of beans in the microwave is the extent of my cooking. But I thought, I don't know, maybe if you want to name off some of the dishes or some of the things that really stood out to you in terms of, you know, favorites in this book as well.
I'm totally obsessed with things wrapped in things, so I have an entire dumplings chapter.
Wow. Oh, I love dumplings.
Mm. All kinds of like things like pot stickers and steamed buns and all kinds of dumplings from all over the world. So if you like dumplings, please go there. Check it out. I mean, it's a huge book right now. Like, I'm trying to remember all 300 recipes. I mean, there's really a lot to draw on in there. I had a lot of fun making all different kinds of curries. Like large, big bowl Asian noodle soups that have like toppings, like fresh toppings on top of the noodles and like, you know, all the different various proteins in there. Desserts, of course there's desserts. I can't seem to stay away from desserts. And one of my favorite desserts that I make all the time, and I've served all, you know, omnivores to vegans, to everyone in between, is an Ethiopian chocolate torte.
Oh.
Where it's kind of like a, you know, a spin-off of spicy chocolate thing that's going on, but I use Ethiopian spices instead of like just like chilies or something. So it's very easy. It's gluten-free, so even gluten-free folks can get down with this. And it's very impressive and elegant. So, yeah.
I love some of the titles, like it's easy being green curry and this is Sparta spinach pie.
Yes, yes.
long does it take to produce a cookbook like this? I mean, it seems like how... Yeah, and you have to have... How do you volunteer to be a taster for the recipe?
Okay.
More importantly, come to your house.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it took years. I mean, that cookbook was a good 2-year process. And it also draws from, like, just years of cooking, too. Right now I'm kind of scheming through my cookbook. I'm working on a tight deadline with that. So it depends. Like, usually cookbooks that take at least a year, sometimes two, sometimes more. And as far as testers go, I do use recipe testers from out in the wild. If you're interested in testing a recipe, I announce it on my blog when I'm looking for testers. So, yeah.
So before we go, we'd like for you to give us a website that people can go to.
Yes, you can go to veganlatina.com.
And a link to all of your cookbooks are available there, and I'm sure they're available at all of the general bookstore outlets like Amazon, et cetera.
Yep, all the places where they have a book. You can also find me on Twitter, too, Terry Hope. And Instagram, I think I'm Terry Hope there as well. So, I'm kind of lazy lately. I'm with the Internet, but I will be sending some updates soon. What's going on?
After the latest salad is done.
Yes, after I get another salad.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I'm looking forward to trying out some of these salads. I personally love to eat salad in the summer, like you said. I like to come home when it's like 99 degrees and just to eat something hot and steamy isn't that appealing, but a nice salad is always refreshing. So,
with a cold soup on the side.
Right. Yeah.
Terry, it's been great having you on ACT Radio. We appreciate your time today and wish you the best of luck in the future.
Thanks, guys.
If you're curious about vegan cuisine, why don't you join us for the Vegetarian Society of El Paso Summer Dinner and a Movie, which will feature a vegan buffet and a showing of the film Forks Over Knives. That's on July 20th. Make your reservation now at vsep.org or vsep.reserve@gmail.com.
And if you'd like to learn more about a vegetarian or vegan diet, you can go to the Vegetarian Society of El Paso website at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACT Radio, you can find them archived at ktep.org. Just click the listen button. Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.